Okay, hi. Hi, friends, and I have time just for a short program before an errand. We're on Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, Section 1, Part 7. We're beginning on page 65, and today is, what day is today? Yeah, the 17th of August. Let's see, that's correct. Now, a little bit of a segue. How then can you keep your minds free from your own desires and from your own interpretations? Presumably, let me say that those interpretations are very limited. DK goes on, by achieving that poised and positive negativity on the part of the two lower aspects of the personality, the astral body and the brain, as well as the etheric brain. He says further, these determine the reactions of the lower centers, and particularly of the solar plexus center. And then the conclusion is, from him, the mind will then be left free to fulfill three functions, and that's what we're looking at right now. So if we can manage a kind of non-interference on the part of the astral vehicle and the brain, which records the senses, and this includes the etheric brain, or the, let's just say, the etheric body, then the mind can function as it is supposed to function in the matter of preparing us for real discipleship service. So the mind will be left free to fulfill three functions. One, that of soul contact. And this will result, the Tibetan says, in illumination and a working knowledge of the immediate aspect of the plan. A working knowledge of the immediate aspect of the plan. So let me say that it is through the mind that we must achieve the soul contact, and not as the mystics have attempted to do for so many centuries, more strictly through the astral body of yearning, desiring, longing for something higher that is called God. The mind will be left free then to fulfill the function of soul contact. And what else? That of thought form formulation and creation. So this, let me say, is part of the magical process that we study in such great detail in a treatise on white magic. So then, the Tibetan goes on, then a clear thought form can be constructed with definiteness, and it can be positively directed. I think we do recognize that this very much includes the magical process. The soul gives the hint, but the mind gives the formulation, which has to be brought down and materialized. So that's another function that is fulfilled. In the Tibetan's words, that of thought formulation and thought form creation. And there's one more function, that of working on mental levels with your group brothers so that your thought form is part of their thought form. And you can, well, let's get that much down anyway. And you can, therefore, the Tibetan says, unitedly produce a living, embodied form which can be directed as I may determine. So there's something larger here. It is a group thought form, and it is something which the Tibetan can direct, wield, utilize for purposes which he alone knows and which are beyond our range of understanding. So, just summarizing here, that if we can manage the non-interference of the lower aspects of our system, astral, etheric and physical brain, etheric body, physical body, and brain, then the mind will fulfill three functions, that of soul contact, that of thought formulation and thought form creation, and that of working on mental levels with your group brothers, as he says, so that your thought form is part of their thought form, and that, of course, makes a group thought form available to the Tibetan for good purposes and maybe purposes undisclosed to us, but seen very clearly by him. So DK, he is focusing on questions which are arising in the minds of the group in training. And natural questions, and I suppose he studies the minds of the members of his group and sees these questions taking shape. Another question, he says, might here arise. Are there any specific and brief rules which should be obeyed? May I ask here all of us to understand that this path of occultism is filled with rules. If we obey them with occult obedience, we progress individually and as a group. If we do not obey, we fool ourselves into thinking that we are progressing, but in fact, we are not remaining or abiding in a condition of much usefulness. So, the following, says the Tibetan, might be given, the following brief rules. But, he says, I would remind you that it is what you are that counts in this work more powerfully than anything else. The following might be given, he says, but I would remind you that it is what you are that counts in this work more powerfully than anything else. Well, we can pause and say, what are we in this work? What are we? Have we relinquished obsessive self-concern? Have we forgotten the good self and the bad self and let only Christ be seen and heard? Have we forgotten the self, focused on the plan because the work needs us? Well, the Tibetan says, the controlling factor is harmlessness in thought and word. The practice of this with proper observation will greatly help all of you. Harmlessness. Perfect poise, a completed point of view, divine understanding. I think in the, I hope I'm correct here, but in the rules and laws for healing, this harmlessness is brought brought to the fore. So the controlling factor is harmlessness in thought and word. And I presume indeed as well. He goes on, the practice of this with proper observation will greatly help all of you. What is this observation? Well, to see whether it really is harmless, I suppose. The next from the Tibetan comes a refusal to think unkindly. Now, let me pause to say, the meaning of Maitreya is loving kindness. So it's in a way, imitation of the great Lord, that we refuse to think unkindly or with criticism, the third major cause of glamour. This is essential in connection with those whose minds you seek to impress. Let me say that if we are seeking to impress from a superior position, and one that, in simple terms, puts the other person down, it's not going to work. So the refusal to think unkindly or with criticism, and you know, that is a rule which it is easy or common to violate. And then he goes on and says, silence, complete and unbroken as to what you are doing, is also a vital factor. And I might interpolate here that the members of the groups that he had gathered were to maintain a complete silence as to their membership in such groups and their undertakings. Because as we know that when the silence is violated, the gossip begins, and that is destructive. D.K. goes on to say, the utterance of words in connection with this most subtle and confidential work, or even discussion of the work with a fellow disciple. Let me add, it might depend upon what kind of discussion. But nevertheless, even discussion of the work with a fellow disciple can shatter the delicate thought form which you are attempting to build. So let me add that in the magical process, this kind of care has to be observed. So much, my friends, lies ahead of us in terms of the real ability to be a spiritual occultist. Sometimes I wonder why D.K. bothers with us, and I am also aware that Alice Bailey considered herself to be the second best, or maybe even third best choice. She did not, well, in all humility, she did not rank herself very high. She was devoid of that hubris which can overtake an ambitious disciple. So, the utterance of words, he says, and even discussion with a fellow disciple, can shatter the delicate thought form which you are attempting to build. And further, he goes on, it can render the work of weeks abortive. Well, let me add that that's how delicate the matter is and how wise it is to follow the instructions as given and attempt with all of our self-regulation not to violate those instructions. D.K. goes on, a balanced attitude in relation to those in power throughout the world must also be cultivated. And I suppose, let me add, we cannot be involved in hatred of any kind. We have to see these people as souls. Sometimes they are evil people. And he did warn against sending love to Hitler and his type. But I suppose that does not negate understanding. So these people who are in power, of them, DK says, they need above all else the inspiration which can be brought to them from the hierarchy. Of course, may I add, they don't necessarily know that. Having, in a number of cases, relinquished knowledge that they are actually associated with the hierarchy, or have been or are working for hierarchy, so that they can or could sustain the necessary concentration to do their job properly. So harmlessness, refusal, silence, these three factors are what he takes up in this paragraph, so that we can abide by rules which will go a long way to guarantee our success and the success of the group that we are participating with. Now, we will have more opportunity, I think so. When you look out into the world today, it looks pretty dire, and calamity is occurring in many places, and in a way throughout humanity. The elements are out of balance. And great changes, whose major purpose might be to alert humanity to the need for change, are occurring. Disease, fires, floods, violent winds, earthquakes, all the elements are out of balance. But then we have to think that, in fact, the planet is passing through a kind of initiation. In a way, a fourth subsidiary initiation, and that is bringing much disturbance and much suffering to the human cell. I think we have to have that wider point of view. Which informs us of the fact that this is what's going on now is not just about personal aspiration or personal ambition or the attempt to become a disciple and so forth. We're in a planetary crisis, which we can help to ameliorate if we will, well, follow the rules, I guess. Harmlessness, refusal to think unkindly, and notice, it's not just action, it's thinking. And then a requisite silence. And that was so necessary, of course. When silence would not be maintained, jealousies would break out. Why are you accepted into these groups you talk about? And why am not I thus accepted? And that would create yet another form of disturbance. I'm reminded also that we have to constantly consult page 473 and following of a treatise on white magic, where rules are given to us about the cleansing process through which we must pass. And the following sentences by D.K. Relate to those rules as well. So friends, do read those 15 counsels and reread them and see what it is you really have to do in order to one day become an adept. There's a rule which, or a couple of them that tell you how watchful you have to be and what you have to cast out, like cast out all fear, all hate, all greed. What you have to think about, and how you can poison yourself if you are not careful. And that will be a poisoning which occurs through thought and emotional attitudes. So do go to those few pages and then ponder them as if DK were talking straight to you and straight to the groups that he is trying to, or was trying at that time, to assemble. I think in the future, my guess is that he will again be assembling. So DK goes on to say, I would ask you, therefore, to practice purging the content of your minds of all critical and unkind thoughts, so you can achieve an attitude of divine indifference to the ephemeral and fleeting personalities. And well, may I add here that this ties in with the questions that he asked in some of the foregoing programs about impersonality, where he begins, you know, with the question that if someone counters us or does not think as we do or challenges us, do we love that person? Do we keep silence? Or do we maybe try to set that person straight from a superior attitude that we have adopted? So anyway, purge your minds, he says. Purging the content of your minds of all critical and unkind thoughts, so that you can achieve an attitude of divine indifference to the ephemeral, fleeting personalities. Again, may I add that he considers these personalities as part of what he calls the phantasmagoria of life. The personalities are not real or abiding, though they are actual and do have to be dealt with. Divine indifference to the fleeting personalities, and further he says, to the chaos everywhere to be seen. Remember, this was the run-up to the Second World War. And so endeavor to tune in on the attitude of hierarchy, because that is the attitude of hierarchy. This divine indifference, which does not mean they do not deeply care about all of us and about the plan in general. As personalities, we are not going to matter to them. Those are fleeting phenomena. But as souls, we and the groups formed of such as we hope to be are of importance. So let's get a sense of proportion about all this, about what's really essential and what's non-essential. The hierarchy has set the example, and we want to be able to imitate that hierarchy, just the way the book, The Imitation of Christ, by Thomas A. Kempis, was so strongly praised by Master Moria. It wasn't the worship of Christ, it was the imitation of Christ, which evoked from us the right attitude. So, over and over again, love, refraining from all critical and unkind thoughts. And then perhaps there is a opportunity that the one we try to reach, or the ones we try to reach, may in fact be reached. Okay. DK goes on to say, this involves the emphasis of the consciousness aspect and the careful observation of all that goes on beneath the surface. Awakening, arousing, and stimulating to a pronounced mental activity, the hitherto unconscious masses. May I say, we do have a very strong responsibility here, because we now know something. And when you know, you must carry out, if you can, the implications of that which you know. because the masses are not yet awakened, aroused, stimulated in the right way. They have to leave behind the mass consciousness and begin to enter more the Leo phase of consciousness, which begins a whole series of meditative steps. They can become mentally focused. Not that we separate ourselves from the masses. We have all been the masses. When, you know, it's hard to say, but certainly in the Atlantean period, we did not have the kind of intelligence that we now have. So we're not sitting in the seat of the proud person, we're just part of the great chain of hierarchy, lowering one hand to help up those who need help and raising one hand to be grasped by another and higher being in that chain of hierarchy. Now, remember that all of this here is being written some 85 to 90 years ago. We could probably find out the exact timing, but 1931 began the sending out of the letters to the people who were in the various groups of nine and so forth. That's a long time ago when we consider our notion of how time passes. It's the slightest little blip when looked at from the broader perspective. And what is here stated as necessary, I'm sure you will all agree, is still necessary. DK goes on here. The events which are happening in every country are bringing this about with much rapidity. Let's say that the masses are awakening, and they continue to awaken, even though there are some quite powerful rear guard actions being fought to preserve a recalcitrant, backward-moving attitude. Nevertheless, progress is to be noted. DK goes on, humanity is coming alive. What can that mean? More and more the energies of the soul and even of the living cosmic ethers are filtering down into the human consciousness and raising the level of the mass. DK's perspective must be quite extraordinary, and maybe we can begin to approximate it just a little bit. He says again, humanity is coming alive and its consciousness is awakening to the subjective values. So that is encouraging, correct? That is encouraging. And we know that as bad as things can seem, we certainly don't see the whole picture. And if hierarchy says, look, humanity is awakening, we have to give credit to why they are saying so. They do see, and so far we see, as Paul said, through a glass darkly. The hierarchy, says the Tibetan, is sore beset to meet humanity's emerging need of guidance. And a word, you know, those two words together, may I add, sore beset are old words, but it means that hierarchy is pressed to the extreme to meet humanity's emerging need of guidance. We all can see, can we not, what happens when humanity remains unguided and still the victim of age-old limiting thought forms. It certainly is happening at the moment in the battle for democracy, which is occurring not only in the United States, where it has an unusually acute focus, but all over the world. The hierarchy, says the Tibetan, is sore beset to meet humanity's emerging need of guidance. The sensitivity of the human race as the result of economic insufficiency, may I add, still a problem, of war, still a problem, anxiety and pain, still with us, operative, challenging. The sensitivity of the human race is becoming so acute that we who work on the inner side must hasten to impress sensitive, awakening psychics with the right impression. And I suppose they can bring through that which will help to guide and be of aid to those who are rendered vulnerable through not having the basics, through constant war, through fear and anxiety and pain. And DK goes on, hence our effort to create these groups and to use people like yourselves who are theoretically harmless, but actually full of prejudice and hasty judgments. Then I'll add that avoiding rashness and haste and prejudgment, which is prejudice, is all part of really being harmless. DK says, we have to use the material, he's referring to us as material, we have to use the material which lies to hand and are greatly handicapped at all times. Well, you see, hierarchy struggles on, using the material to hand. Better to do that than to do nothing. And so, as an example of how they struggle on, we can on our own lower turn of the spiral also. Keep on keeping on, keep on struggling on through pain and disappointment and opposition, uncertainty. We too, we can stand in emulation of the members of the Great White Lodge who are sore beset. See how hard they are trying, right? 90 years ago, this is written, roughly. And see how they continue to labor. And are by no means concluding their labors on behalf of humanity and thus of the lower kingdoms and thus of the planet as a whole. Let's just say they set a great example, which is one of those points which DK makes in White Magic. Set an example. They fulfill those four requirements. They obey the, they inquire the way, of course. They obey the inner impulses of the soul, and they pay no attention to the apparently wise, but often not so wise, worldly counsel. They see right through it, and they set an example. Now, those are four modes of behavior that we must practice. DK goes on to say, as you have worked consciously at the purification of the mind. Now remember, he's talking to disciples, and some of them accepted disciples who still have to continue purifying the mind. So after, he says, after you have worked consciously at the purification of the mind, and after you have attempted to free yourselves from prejudice, which means, of course, your mind is made up before you even examine a situation. Okay. Free yourselves from prejudice, going on, from preconceived ideas and hasty judgments and determinations based upon your own background, tradition, social and racial status. You will then brood consciously on the process of thought form making, because that's one of the three ways the mind can function. I think it was example number two above. And going on with DK, you will remember that for group purposes and for simplicity, the following three stages are of importance. And surely DK demonstrates for us the organization of his mind as a representative of hierarchy, the society of organized and illumined minds. So, for group purposes and simplicity, Well, here he says, you will then brood. Brood, it's a pondering until something hatches, as it were. Your brood of thoughts hatch. You will brood on these three. Number one, and as you do so, these stages are of importance. The stage of pondering over the idea, which is to be impressed upon the mind of some individual. Well, that's certainly not hasty action, is it? He goes on to say, this pondering and carefully directed thinking process, or thinking, produces construction. It is a creative act and is the first real stage in our work. He says, I do not want you to endeavor to build thought forms. I want you to think clearly along lines which I may indicate. And may I say, a number of students of his just didn't go with that. But anyway, we do have here what he wants us to do. And then the desired thought form will automatically take shape, and all of you will have contributed something to it. So we're looking at three stages, which are of importance. As we engage in the process of thought form making. Now the next stage, when the thought form is thus built in your mind, there will follow a period wherein it becomes alive. It slowly becomes the living embodiment of the desired idea, vibrant and active and ready for service. And I think we have to remind ourselves that this living idea begins with the soul. The soul is actually originating those impulses, which must be turned into living thought forms, vitalized by desire and given the materializing potential by the etheric body. So, three stages regarding thought form making. That's what we're looking at here. And then, when this stage is reached, you can then, and he says, as a group, proceed with the stage of direction. Well, it's so true that we have to be careful about what we're going to direct. It has to be of esoteric value and in line with the plan and part of the work. So we're talking about the process of impression here, aren't we? D.K. goes on, having carefully in mind the person to be impressed and the fact of your group as the impressing agency, thus providing the two poles between which interplay is desired. Yes, and that is the impressing group and the person. Then he goes on to say, you will try to see the living embodied idea playing back and forth between the two poles. I have to say, this is so practical and yet technical at the same time. He goes on, you will send it out on the wings of love, impelled by the wise desire to serve, and in obedience to my directions. He is he not, suggesting obedience? It seems one of the very first things to be cultivated by often adolescently inclined disciples, aspirants. Time and again it may return to you for revivifying and enrichment before its task is satisfactorily completed. So we're learning how to send forth an impressing agent of value. And what are these three suggestions? Three stages in the process of thought form making and rendering the thought form effective in service. DK goes on, and I will only go on a little longer because my time is rapidly running out for this program. The externalized groups of disciples are all of them intended to be expressions of a type of group relation which will be better known and understood when the world has entered into the next cycle and era of peace. Well, we are promised, are we not, scripturally anyway, a peace that will reign for 1,000 years. Now that is maybe partially symbolic, but it is an era in which the Christ will have appeared before the eyes of humanity, and every eye shall see him. And may I say, may we be among those who recognize when we do see. He goes on, DK goes on, certain types of force are, as you know, to be later utilized by the groups for specific group ends and for world service. May I say that each of the C groups is the bearer of such types of force. DK goes on to say, the motive for all such service must not be forgotten by you as you study and work in a master's group. The group, of course, is on the periphery of the ashram. DK says, The objective is not your individual assistance and unfoldment, but your training in certain group alignments and activities which will enable these groups of disciples to work in a definite and specific manner. The fact, however, he says, that one group will work with one type of force and another group of disciples will employ a different kind must not in any sense be deemed to indicate separate activity or separative interest. The unity factor, may I say, must be preserved. All will be working towards one objective or goal, and all will work with the same divine energy, differentiated into varying forces for the purposes of service in one department of life or another. Let's note that the energies are differentiated into specialized forces. I would ask you, he says, to ponder deeply upon the various aspects of the outlined plan or system of group work which I have brought to you. For it is a tentative endeavor, tentative because it is an experiment, but okay. For it is a tentative endeavor to externalize upon earth certain phases of hierarchical endeavor. I guess this is very clear. And again, he, reiterates what is the purpose of the groups so people do not slide into that attitude that it's all about me and I am receiving the training for me, for myself. It's not about that at all. And the sooner we think about how we can really contribute, to the raising of the mass consciousness into something more in line with the soul, then we are on the right track when we can do that. So we have worked our way up to page something or other here. It seemed to have skipped some kind of page 68 is where we are. Okay, so let's go back here a little bit because our work is with this little program is concluded, and I will bring it down, having completed, or at least tried to call to our attention important points that the Tibetans offered in this program number 29. So here it is, program 29. Concluded, and this day is the 17th, and we will next begin with program 30, still in section 7, and not knowing exactly when we can begin, but hopefully it will be soon. So friends, Tuya and I and the whole team, BL and Joe and Michael Crow, Michael Stacy, and Bob Basil, to whom I give tremendous thanks over the years, and some of the other helpers with these things, and Anne Nguyen translating these things for the Vietnamese group. We wish you love and many blessings. And let's see here. 65 to 68. And deep studies. You will get out of this something different than what I am extracting. We all will find the hints that are pertinent to us because, as I say, every word of the Tibetans is being spoken, and some additional comments are being made by me for the sake of emphasis and for the sake of connecting the Tibetans' comments with other aspects, other comments in his work. So until a bit later, we wish you the very best. And full moon coming up. Oh well. Ingress, full moon. We keep going with those. See you soon.